lift your head, weary sinner. The river's just ahead. Down a path of forgiveness, salvation's waiting there. You build a mighty fortress, 10,000 burdens high. Love is here to lift you up.
And it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director, Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in, whether that be live here at Joy 620 or listening to the podcast as we put it on iTunes and Google Play and TuneIn app, all anywhere podcasts are found. You can find this show. Also, we'll be posting it to Facebook. You can follow us on Facebook, Investing Hope, as well. So we're certainly glad that you're listening, you're tuning in. Last week, we had a great conversation with a good friend of mine from the National Embryo Donation Center here in Knoxville, and a good conversation with Mark. And you can go back and listen to last week's show if you are interested in that process and the conversation on IVF and the conversation on adopting embryos. And there's, you know, any depending on what numbers you're looking at, you have between 600,000 and 1 million frozen embryos in this country that are just sitting there. Some of them are waiting to be adopted. Some of them will be destroyed. Some of them are just kind of sitting, waiting to see what will happen with them. And so if that's something you're interested in or you want to learn more about, I would encourage you to listen to last week's show. Also, you can do some research online for that as well. Today, what I want to do is talk about a few things. I want to start with feminism. And so we're going to start there. It makes sense for a dude to talk about feminism. And so we're going to start there. And then we are going to look at March for Life. They have named what their new theme is for this year's march, and so we're going to talk about that, and their theme is unique from day one. Pro-life is pro-science. And so we're going to talk about what's going on with the March for Life coming up in January. It'll be here before you know it. And then we'll look at some, there's a website right now, U.S. abortion pill website under investigation by the FDA. And so we're going to look at what's going on with that, and just a lot to talk about. There's always something to talk about when it comes to the life issue. And so that's why we come on every single week, is we talk about the life issue from a very broad sense, like we did last week with the conversation, and like we'll do today. We also talk about it from a very narrowed down sense in terms of what we're doing at Hope Resource Center every single day and the work of pregnancy centers across this country. But I think it's important that we do our research and we have these conversations with each other so that when conversations arise, I'm not telling you to go out looking for them, but when they arise, we'll be able to handle those conversations appropriately, not in anger, not in bitterness, but in gentleness as we have a conversation on why we stand for life and why it's important. So let's first start with feminism. So what many people may not know is a lot of folks will look at, like, Susan B. Anthony is one of the great feminists that we've ever seen. And one thing we tend to neglect about her is she was very much pro-life. And so when we see things like we saw after the past presidential election, again, I'm not going to get into the ins and outs of the presidential election, but what we did see was we saw last year while we were in Washington for the March for Life, the day after we marched, there was what they called the Women's March. And they said it was a movement for all women. It didn't matter if you were Republican, Democrat, or not. It was a movement for women. The Women's March was supposed to be one that was unifying women to say, look, we're strong, we're bold, and these are things that we're going to stand for, and we're not going to stand for harassment. We're not going to stand for a rape culture and whether that exists or not. We're going to stand for what is right. And so a lot of folks, even in the pro-life movement, said, this is awesome. We're going to celebrate this. Women coming out in large numbers to tell the world, look, we have value, we matter, and our voices matter. But the interesting thing about that was some pro-life groups led by Abby Johnson and others who would call themselves feminist reached out to the Women's March and said, look, we want to join you in this. Can we join you as a group? Can the pro-life feminists join you as a group? Can we have banners? Can we advertise with you? And guess what the Women's March folks said? Well, no, you can't join us because you're pro-life, and that's not feminism. So was it about women and the unification of women on an issue, or was it an agenda that was being pushed and masquerading as a unification of women, but the reality was there was a narrative and an agenda that they were pushing. And what we have learned is it appears like, if you look at those that started the Women's March, and you can go online and do that. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that today. But if you go look, it appears like there's a clear agenda, and that agenda is not pro-life, and that agenda is the furthest thing from anyone that would resemble conservative or even middle of the road. And so it's interesting. But one thing that there's an article in the New York Times this week written by Lauren Enriquez, and she is with Human Coalition, and it's interesting her discussion on this. And so she said, though the march was driven, and she calls them, by the left, it claimed to speak for women in general, and indeed women of all ages, races, and states poured onto the National Mall. Yet lost in the action then and since is any sense of what the movement stands for. Ultimately, it settled for a sense of what the movement is against, and not just a caricature of the president, but also it was most pointedly, while the Women's March claimed to stand for love, nonviolence, and inclusion, its organizers staunchly refused to extend that inclusion to pro-life women. We cannot overlook the significance of this act because it reveals a fatal chink in the armor of the new feminist resistance movement, its radical position on abortion. This movement will thus be unable to unite American women because it rejects the position that most American women take on abortion, that it should be completely illegal or legal but with significant restrictions. According to the latest Knights of Columbus poll, an annual survey of views on abortion, just over half of all women want to see further restrictions on abortion. To millions of women, including young people, this is not just a policy stance. It informs many areas of our lives as women. This is the writer says. To us, resistance has to include opposition to the lie that freedom can be bought with the blood of our preborn children. We reject the notion that we need free abortion on demand without apology. We are offended by the news media's belligerent efforts to portray the pro-abortion movement as normal while turning a blind eye to the millions of us who believe that women deserve something better than abortion. We reject a vitriolic minority claiming to speak on our behalf and excluding us from the women's movement. Anti-abortion women reject the version of feminism that infers that we cannot be equal to men unless we snuff out what is unique about us as women, which is our ability to protect, nourish, and nurture new life inside of our bodies. We resist the conventional wisdom that women will succeed in school, career, and life only if they relegate childbearing to an elusive ideal moment in time. We reject the pressure to believe that killing our children and living full lives are mutually inclusive. They're not. And the author goes on, as a woman who has been involved in the pro-life movement for my entire adult life, I want to obliterate the stereotype that the people working to end abortion hate women. Actually, the pro-life movement empowers women in tangible ways. At Human Coalition, they extend tangible, compassionate help to pregnant women who believe that abortion is the best or only option available to them. That's what we do at Hope Resource Center. This is an undeserved, underserved group, and we are working to stand in the gap for them. And it's not just pro-life women who feel this way. The men that are involved in the pro-life movement want to end abortion not because they want to control women, but because they agree that requiring the sacrifice of woman's children in exchange for her success is unimaginable. If a movement wants to speak for me, and this is the author talking, as a woman, then it must be broad enough to take my firm beliefs and accept them as mainstream. Women who defy the abortion movement know that our power is not in a clenched fist or an act of violence against anyone, especially not against our preborn children. Rather, our power is in upending the abortion status quo by demanding more for ourselves, for our families, and for our children. Okay, so when we see feminism, I think for a long time we didn't really know what that word meant. It you know, during different decades we've seen it, and it's been, maybe it's a far left issue, or some may say it was a far right issue, or somewhere in between. And right now what we're seeing is a lot of pro-life feminists stand up and say, look, we are feminist. And the last thing we want to do is take away the unique thing about us, the thing that we can do that men can't do, and that is have children. So that's the interesting thing. When we think about feminism today and their call for abortion on demand without apology, and they say things like, anything you can do, I can do better, and then they want to say that we need more abortions. What does that say? It says, women, you are not strong enough to have your dreams and your baby. You're going to have to pick one. That's not empowering women. Their movement would say, we look at a woman and say, look, the you do a lot of wonderful things, but there's one thing you can do that no man can do, and that is have a baby. And we're going to take that from you via abortion. Is that empowerment? Is that progress? Is that the direction that we want to go? I have three daughters. Do I want to look at my daughters and say, the last thing you need to do is try to chase your dreams and have a baby? You're going to have to choose one, sweetie. Of course I wouldn't say that. And in the same way, I wouldn't look at my son and say, hey, if you get a girl pregnant, don't worry about it. We can take care of it. She can just go have an abortion and then you can go on with your life. I wouldn't say that to him. And I get it. I get that there's some of our population that do not have that support system. They don't have a dad. They don't have a mom that's pouring in and saying, you need to man up. You need to step up in these situations. But the last thing we need is a culture and a society that is saying, you have to choose one, your baby or your future. You can't have both. That's nonsense. That's why we do the work that we do at Hope Resource Center. It's so that our patients can see, look, you don't have to pick one. They're not in battle against each other. We have actual data that shows, not simple stories that we pick here and there, but actual data that shows you can do both. You can achieve your dreams. It may take longer, but you can achieve your dreams while having your baby. You see, empowerment is looking at someone and encouraging them to do something that may be tough, but in the long run, it's going to be for their betterment. Empowerment is not looking at someone and saying, go the easy way. You can't do this. You can't possibly do this on your own. That's not empowerment. That's not how we encourage and motivate citizens of this country. And it's certainly not pro-woman when your mantra is get rid of that thing inside of you because it's going to hold you back. That's not pro-woman. We'll talk more when we come back. So as we have a conversation today about, we started the show talking about feminism and empowering women. And frankly, the pro-life movement is a pro-woman movement. And anyone that says otherwise is just not paying attention. I mean, it baffles me. When I go to pro-life get-togethers, that sounds weird. It's like we have get-togethers. When I go to conferences and things like that, what I often hear is, oh, what got you into pregnancy center work? You're a dude, and there's not a lot of dudes in this work. Why is that? Because it's a pro woman. I mean, the folks that have been leading the charge in this movement, in the pregnancy center movement, are female. So to say that it's not pro woman is just craziness. And so the pro life movement is certainly pro woman. It's certainly pro baby, and it's certainly pro family. There's no apologizing for that. But what we're also pro is we're pro-science. You know, it's interesting when we have a conversation, when anyone brings up issues like climate change or something like that, what are we often told? We're told that those that don't believe in climate change are science deniers. That's what we hear. And so when in reality, what we find is most people, vast majority of people, believe the climate is changing. I mean, the climate changes. It has since the beginning of time. Where the disagreements come in is how much change is occurring because of humans' involvement. Is any change occurring because of humans' involvement? Those type things. And so that's where a discussion comes in, not usually with climate change, but a discussion comes in when it terms of, you know, humans' involvement with that. But we're oftentimes called science deniers. If you're a conservative, you've probably been called a science denier. But it's interesting when we look at life, when we look at the abortion issue, who's the one denying science? What are we told? Well, it's just a blob of cells. Or it's a blob of tissue. It's a clump of cells. It's not a baby. It's not a baby inside of there. We even have prominent politicians say that a child does not have the rights awarded to it through the Constitution until it leaves the hospital. That's a bit extreme. We have laws on the books that say you can go get an abortion in some parts of the country up to 24, 25 weeks, and that's okay. And in some of those same states, if you are a pregnant woman driving to the abortion clinic and you're hit by a drunk driver, that drunk driver is going to be charged with not just your death, but the death of your unborn child. Well, that doesn't make any sense. That's not logical. That's not rational thought. And so these are the things that it's interesting to me that we often throw out that folks are denying science when one of the most scientific things we have is birth. We can look around, and I've said this before, the one thing that everybody has in common, whether you're pro-life or pro-choice or somewhere in between, the one thing that we all have in common is we were made the same way. Someone at some point in time chose for us to live. Someone at some point in time chose when they got pregnant, I'm going to carry this pregnancy to term, and I'm going to have this child. Some of us out there were adopted. Some of us out there spent time in foster care. Some of us out there were born to parents, but they were abusive parents and they were terrible, but we were raised in that atmosphere. We all have different backgrounds, sure. But the fact remains, we were all born to and grew inside of a womb. And so that brings me to March for Life this year. And I'm hoping that one day the March for Life will turn into a celebration and not one to tell the world, look, the abortion laws in the country, in our country, are terrible. But it would turn into a march that says, praise God, the abortion laws have been overturned and Roe v. Wade's been overturned, and now we're at a better place in society. But the March for Life is coming up in January, and they pick a theme every year. And so Jenny Mancini, who is over the March for Life, she wrote an article recently on the theme, and I wanted to read you the article because I think it's important that we walk through what this means. So each year, the March for Life board and staff choose a theme that will best contribute to building a culture of life. And as they do so, they take into account cultural norms and current events to help make their message resonate with Americans. This year, March for Life leadership wanted to draw attention to the fact that science and technology continue to reveal the humanity and life of an unborn person, even its very earliest stage. That's why the 2019 March for Life theme is unique from day one. Pro-life is pro-science. In 2008, President Obama was famously asked, when does life begin? He dodged the question by joking that was above his pay grade. While the response conveniently gives cover when advocating policies that are destructive of life in its earliest stages, the answer isn't difficult. An organism is alive when it meets four criteria: metabolism, reaction to stimuli, growth, and reproduction. The zygote, the first cell formed at the moment of conception, is the earliest developmental stage of the human embryo. It is undeniably human in that it is composed of human DNA and totally different from any other human that has ever existed. DNA is present, whether it's 23 pairs of chromosomes or 22. The fingerprint that each of us has, distinguishing us from any other human on the planet, is determined by the DNA on day one. Fetal development, in its simplicity and depth, is astonishing. Only 3 weeks after fertilization of a little one's heart starts beating. At 8 weeks of pregnancy, the baby has started moving around, even though the mom can't feel this quite yet. By the 10th week of pregnancy, a baby's fingers and toes are forming. By 13 weeks, right at the end of the first trimester, the baby has fingerprints. If the baby is female, she already has more than 2 million eggs. During the second trimester, organs including kidneys begin to work. And expectant parents might even see their little one sucking his thumb on an ultrasound. At 19 weeks of development, a baby's senses are developing and she or he can likely recognize mom's voice at this stage. 100 years ago, our understanding of the embryonic development was very different from what it is now. Medical advancements continue to reaffirm the science behind the pro-life cause, that life begins when eggs meet sperm and a new, unique human embryo is created. Moreover, breakthroughs in science and ultrasound technology have provided a window into the womb, allowing us to witness firsthand the development of life. Pro-life is pro-science, and science should always be at the service of life. Unfortunately, this is not always the case. Recently, you might have read that the Department of Health and Human Services canceled a contract related to acquisition of aborted fetal tissue between the Food and Drug Administration and an organization called Advanced Biosciences Research. ABR is a major supplier of aborted fetal tissue. To help counter this, Representative Jim Banks of Indiana and a co-sponsor, Dan Lipinski of Illinois, introduced the Patients First Act, which would prohibit tax dollars from going towards such needless destruction in the name of research. Instead, it would redirect federal support to alternative stem cell research, including the use of adult stem cells, which has proven to be much more successful in saving lives. Science makes clear that human life and our uniqueness as individuals begins on day one, at fertilization. Life, in its most vulnerable form, should be protected, and we are grateful for legislation that does that. It is for such reason that each January we march. We march to protect life in its earliest and most vulnerable stages, and we march to restore a vision of a world where the beauty, dignity, and uniqueness of every human life are valued and protected from day one. You see, that is why we are pro-life. And the beautiful thing about what March for Life is doing with pro-life, pro-science, is what we've been arguing from a biblical worldview for so long, that life begins at conception, that every human life bears the image of a creator, that every human life points to a deity that we would call God. Now science even has proven that to be the case. Think about everybody that's ever walked the planet. And there's never been another you. You think that just happens by chance? It's the same thing I tell my children. I look at my kids and I say, the Lord chose me out of everyone that's ever walked the planet and ever will walk the planet to be your dad. That is amazing. There will never be another you. That's why we're pro-life. That's why we celebrate the gift of life. And that's why we'll do it until there's no breath left in our lungs, because we have been given the greatest gift ever. And we need to be good stewards of that gift. We'll be back. So as we look at the issue of life, you know, I've been doing a lot of reading lately I'm preparing for January in February and March, because I'll be speaking at a lot of churches about life and abortion and what that looks like from a biblical standpoint. And so through the reading and kind of the research, it's just my eyes have been open more to how much we lack logical and rational conversation when it comes to this issue. And I'm not just saying those that oppose us, but even some of our own in our own camp that would claim to be pro-life don't handle it well when we have these conversations. And so today I was flipping through some articles, and over at the Daily Beast, there's an article about U.S. abortion pill website under investigation by the FDA. And so there's a new website that allows U.S. women to order abortion-inducing drugs online. So used to the mantra of the abortion industry was safe, legal, and rare. Their argument back in 1973 was, look, there are women that are having abortions in alleys with coat hangers and all of these things, which most of that wasn't even true, but that was their argument. And so then we found ourselves with Roe v. Wade. We found a court that went looking for something within the Constitution that wasn't there. And so we, as a country in 1973, said abortion is okay. And because it was an issue that a lot of people didn't really understand or know how to grasp, the interesting thing is the person at the center of that case who wanted an abortion didn't have an abortion after the case. I believe her child was placed for adoption. So somewhere out there, there's a child that survived even the case of Roe v. Wade. But there was a lot of people back then that didn't understand the issue. You had Christians that didn't understand. You had many that said, look, we're just not going to talk about it because we don't know all about it and what to say. Science hadn't advanced to the point with where we have ultrasound is what we have today. And so a lot of people were saying, look, I don't know when life begins. Maybe it begins at conception, but maybe it doesn't. Maybe it is a blob of cells. And so that's what we had in 1973. We had a lot of folks just trying to talk. But the mantra was safe, legal, and rare. The mantra wasn't, look, this is going to be another form of birth control. It was, look, there are going to be cases where a woman's life may be at stake. There are going to be cases of rape. There's going to be cases of incest where we have to allow for the mom to choose to terminate that pregnancy. And sure, there'll be cases every now and then where people will do it out of convenience, but that'll be so few and far between, we don't even need to really talk about that. This is more about the life of the mom, rape and incest. That's what we need to focus on. Safe, legal, rare. So since 1973, we've gone from that to 1 million abortions every single year in this country. We've gone from safe, legal, and rare to a website where you can buy abortion pills and have them shipped to your house. We've gone from safe, legal, and rare to virtual doctors that aren't even in the room with you, that are walking you through the abortion process and giving you some pills. We've gone from safe, legal, and rare to the morning after pill. I saw somebody post online the other day, a female's go-to after a night of partying is the abortion pill. And he was talking about it as it was a joke. You see, I can deal with someone disagreeing with me when it comes to life and abortion. I can handle that. Now, the old me couldn't handle that well. But the 2018 me can handle that. We can have a dialogue and a conversation. What I can't handle is the flippancy at which we talk about life in the womb. Pushing for the morning after pill, pushing for abortion on demand without apology and pills that you can get online, well, that changes things. That changes the discussion. That changes the argument. It's no longer safe, legal, and rare. And so this is why people get amped up about this. It isn't because the pro-life movement wants to take rights away from women. We get amped up because I believe that is a life. Like an actual life. A uniquely created individual. There will never be another one like that individual. And so I'm always interested when we have this dialogue and this conversation, even now that the current administration is looking to do some executive action that's going to take away some things that the past administration did when it comes to transgendered folks. And so right now on social media, there's a big uproar about the opposition is saying to the current administration is they're actually erasing transgendered people from the planet. That's the words that they're using. So I did some research. I read that and I thought, well, that's interesting that they would believe that's the goal of this, when in reality the goal of the executive action is to just put us back to where we've been for, I don't know, the last 6,000 years of saying that it's binary and there is a man and there is a woman, and you know, science says that. So I did some math, and I wanted to go see, okay, well, how many in our population, how many in our country would line up and actually say they are part of, not advocates, not allies, but they are actually part of LGBT and would identify that way. And so I looked it up, and the demographics is 4.5% of the U.S. population, adult population, would identify as LGBT. And then if you look at females, it's like 5%, and males, it's a little bit less. But ultimately, adult humans in America, adult citizens of this country, about 4.5% would claim, would identify as LGBT. So then I thought, okay, I got that math, 4.5%. And then if we look at how many abortions are just done in the largest abortion organization in our country, which is Planned Parenthood, they do about 320,000 abortions every single year. So I thought, okay, well, they're the most vocal ones online, and they're saying that the administration is seeking to erase transgendered from existence. And so they're using that terminology, they're using that language that they're seeking to erase, and what they would call the most vulnerable. And then there was a political candidate that came out and said that they're going after the most vulnerable, and we need to protect the most vulnerable. And this particular political candidate, you may know her. She lost the last election. And so she kept talking about how we're erasing the transgendered folks and that they're the most vulnerable, and we need to protect the most vulnerable. And I just immediately thought, okay, that Planned Parenthood is doing 320,000 abortions every single year. Sometimes more, sometimes less. And so if we use their logic that if you're LGBT, that you're also born that way, that is what they would argue, that it's not a choice. It is, you're born with this, and so we need to embrace it and accept it. So if they're using that logic, then let's use their logic and say, okay, well, they're born this way. So that means 4.5% of the adult population in this country identify because they were born that way, LGBT. Well, then just look at the numbers. Well, okay, well, if you're doing 320,000 abortions every single year, what is 4.5% of that? Well, it's close to 12,000. 12,000 of those abortions, if we're just using statistics and using math, could one not argue that 12,000 LGBT folks are being aborted every single year if you're looking at the numbers? You see, that's a logical conclusion. That's not one that they would be okay with because, well, they wouldn't believe that it's life in the womb. But if it's not life in the womb, then how could you possibly be born into the LGBT? How could you identify that way? If it's not life in the womb, then I don't know how you get there. But if it is life in the womb and you're born that way, then you're aborting a lot of folks that would ultimately be identifying as LGBT. And you're also, you're talking about women's rights. You're also aborting a lot of females. You're aborting a lot of African Americans. You're aborting a lot of Asian folks, a lot of Hispanic folks. You're aborting a lot of people when we look at a million abortions every single year. You see, so this is a logical conversation. And I think numbers are important when we look at that. That's every single year since 1973, some years more, some years less, but roughly around a million abortions. And in some years, close to 2 million of unique individuals that'll never be created again. That number should rock us. Regardless of which side of the fence you're on, that number should concern us. And we shouldn't talk flippantly about this issue when it involves not just lives in the womb, but the lives of the moms and the dads that are dealing with that as well. We'll be back. I can feel you lifting up the weight of the world. I can feel you lifting up the weight of the world. I can feel you lifting up the weight of the world. You are my joy. You are my joy. Is that United Pursuit? Yeah, that's local. Knoxville. Yeah, that has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today, but it's always good to highlight some local folks that are doing great worship music, and it's not just making a difference here in Knoxville, making a difference all over the world. So today we have talked about a number of things. We talked about feminism. We talked about the March for Life that's coming up in January, and I'll be having a lot more conversations between now and January about that. And I hope to get some folks, maybe Jenny Mancini, the president of the March for Life, on the show so we can have a conversation with her on looking forward to what the march is going to be this year. Maybe some folks from the ERLC as we look at the Evangelicals for Life conference that'll be happening in D.C. Around the march as well. And then we also looked at how today we looked at the issue of it's no longer safe, legal, and rare, but it's abortion on demand, and it's getting the abortion pills not just over the counter, but online, and not even having to deal with a doctor, but getting them shipped to you, and then women having to go through that alone is just we've reached some crazy, interesting times here in 2018 in what is considered progress. And I would say that those type of things, they might have made things easier, but it's regressing. It's not progressing. And so I would just encourage folks to read a little bit about what's going on in our country, around the world, when it comes to the life issue. I think it's very important that we understand some of these issues and have conversations about them, not in a hateful way again, but in a logical, rational way of just, hey, let's talk about this. This is why I believe this. It's important that we know why we believe what we believe. If you claim to be pro-life, why are you pro-life? I think we at times hesitate to ask ourselves questions. We hesitate to ask questions of anyone. So if someone tells me they're pro-choice, my first question would be, well, why is that? Explain that to me. Anytime somebody comes to volunteer, this may make you nervous. Anytime somebody comes to volunteer at Hope, I say, define pro-life to me. I want to hear how you would define it. Because we need to be wrestling with this and getting a better understanding of this issue. And you can learn more about the work that we're doing at Hope Resource Center to help us push the pro-life work. You can go to investinghope.com. I blog there periodically and talk about some of these issues. And so you can read through some of the things that I wrote. You can also listen to this show, which we would appreciate as well. And you can always listen to us live here every Tuesday on Joy 620 at 5 o'clock. We would be grateful if you would do that. Tell your friends about it. And I'm always appreciative to see folks come up and say, hey, I listen to the show every Tuesday afternoon, or I listen to the podcast, or however you hear it. As my granddad would say, it tickles me to death to know that you are listening and learning about the work that we're doing. And so we're happy about that. But I would say, I hope that these conversations, these interviews and different things that occur on this show, that they're moving you to do something. And not just to say that you're pro-life, but actually getting involved in something. And so what we've seen at Hope is we've seen a number of people start bringing food for our patients at parenting class. People that have never been connected to the pro-life movement now stepping in and doing something. Maybe they're mentoring. Maybe they're praying for the work that we're doing. Maybe they're donating to our work and helping us out financially. But we're seeing nurses. We're seeing a lot of people come and say, I've been a nurse for a long time. We had one come just the other day that said, look, I'm a nurse in labor and delivery, and I see this all the time. And I want to do more. I want to mentor. I want to serve. I want to help out here with the work that y'all are doing. We had somebody today give a donation to Hope that they don't even live here in this area, but they heard about us through their daughter, and they wanted to support the work that we're doing. So it's making a difference, and we don't have to do it by being angry people. If we're Christians, we should not be defined as angry people. We have the greatest news the planet's ever seen. That should make you full of joy and happiness. If we're pro-life, if we believe that every human bears the image of our Creator, then we should be a happy people, a joyful people, not an angry, bitter people. And if you're listening today and you're depressed and you're down in the dumps, and maybe you're listening to some of the conversations that we have and it takes you back to some dark places, what I would say to you is, God created you with a purpose. There has never been and there never will be another you. That's purpose. That's intentionality. That should matter to us. That allows us to look in the mirror and say, I don't care what society says. I don't care what my parents say. I don't care what my girlfriend or boyfriend says. I don't care about any of that. What I do know is I have value and I deserve respect because the God of the universe created me with intentionality, with purpose. Scripture says that He knitted me together in my mother's womb. He knew about my shortcomings. He knew about my faults. He knew about the positive and the negative, and He still did what He did. That's a beautiful thing. And that should help us sleep at night. Knowing that a Creator was creative when He made us. Think about that. Celebrate that. And we'll talk to you next week.
Lift your head, weary sinner. The river's just ahead. Down the path of forgiveness, salvation's waiting.